James from StrawPunk.com.
And this is CPS Mike. How the hell are you doing, my friend?
Great. Enjoying the entrepreneurial life and making some new friends on the internet. I was interviewed on a podcast earlier from a fan of mine that apparently he's been a fan for a few years. He's a punk rock musician and fellow podcaster, unfortunately, down in California, the terrible state of California.
That's out in California, not down in California.
Technically, you would have to go down, maybe, to get to California.
Yeah, but you'd have to go out first.
Down and out.
Down and out in California.
Yep, that's a movie. But yeah, it was me and Ben from, I think it's Tantra Punk, had a great conversation. We're apparently both big fans of Fight Club, and that he mentioned Fight Club, and then we went down a Fight Club, you know, path. We talked about how some lessons learned from, you know, punk that can be applied to the survival community, and just some good stuff. Reclaiming your masculinity and being a man. I didn't expect it to go there, but it went there, and it was just a great, very fluid, organic conversation. So I'd love you back on the podcast anytime. So.
All right, and I'm sure you're going to throw a link up to that.
As soon as it airs, sometimes next week, yeah.
Alright, so stay tuned on the site for that.
Yeah.
Alright, but speaking of interviews, we have got a great one coming up today.
Yes.
Another person, by the magic of my own succulent voice, I have managed to coax another person from my celebrity invite list onto our show. The guy I invited last week, Mr. Jeff Radke. I am awesome. Come on, admit it, I'm awesome.
Yep. So it was a great chat with Jeff that we thought we lost. We thought the stupid software that I used to record it, Pamela, we had a drop Skype call, and like at 46 minutes in, 44 minutes in, it
all
dropped
of a sudden
the call.
It just hangs up on us.
Yeah. So we went and called back, and then when we got done, it looked like we only got the last 11 minutes of the phone call.
That's all we could find.
Right. So I used some of my computer kung fu and tracked down the temporary location where the file was stored, and sure enough, it was there in its entirety. We didn't lose any of the phone call.
Keep in mind, this took about 15 minutes.
Of us being really frustrated, because
no,
we thought
we... No, you were frustrated. I was pissed.
Yeah. I was frisked. Frustrated and pissed.
And then he jumped up and hugged me.
Yes. So... We're going to knock out our sponsors real quick so we can get you guys straight into the interview with Jeff Radke of the Lost Skills podcast.
All right, but first, before we do that, let's just tell you about the good folks over at JM Bullion.
JM Bullion, the best place to get your gold and silver online with the best prices, free shipping. For gold and silver, it needs to be a part of your investment strategy to hedge against inflation and for barter during the collapse. JMBullion.com. Go to SurvivalPunk.com. Click the banner in the right-hand margin and give them some love.
All right. And while you're over in that banner, look for the one that says CampingSurvival.com.
Yes, CampingSurvival.com, the home of all your camping and survival needs on the internet. Everything from fish antibiotics with free shipping that you need to have as part of your long-term medical preps.
Bug out bags.
And the Life Straw that I have... reviewed. I have actually not reviewed it. I shot some video of it, and I drank some bad creek water that was tasty afterwards.
Cow poo water.
Yeah, so campingsurvival.com, it makes cow poo water safe to drink.
Find it on that banner, whether you're ready to bug in or bug out. Let's see.
Next, we've got a brand new sponsor of the week. We actually have two brand new sponsors we'll get through real quick. Mai Tai Coffee is exotic Asian coffee that they found. We'll do a big talk on it next standalone podcast. But they found these coffee trees growing in this remote region of Thailand while doing some charity work over there. And magically, Thailand just happened to be a great place to grow coffee. So it's these great organic, high quality coffee beans. So I'm excited. They're sending me out some to try. And I love coffee, so I'm excited to try that. They're sending me out an espresso roast, a French roast, and a special pumpkin spice blend that I'm excited to try for October.
Plus, they've got a special offer for Survival Punk Army members.
Yes, they are. They're hooking me up with a discount code for you guys. So it's another reason to join Survival Punk Army, which we'll talk about later in a second. And it's time for our last sponsor of the day.
FreedomMunitions.com.
Yes, the nation's largest direct-to-consumer ammo manufacturer, all made in the United States using high-quality components. So they do new ammunition, and they do reloaded, as they call it, remanufactured ammunition. And they have some of the best prices I've seen on ammo. Looking earlier today when I wrote the article on them, you can get 1,000 rounds of, I think, 115 grade 9mm ammo for $218, which comes out to 22 cents roughly if you round it up.
That is amazing. Yes. That is amazing. And just like good coffee, and just like gold and silver, ammo is also going to be a great currency after the collapse.
Yes. Great currency, great barter item, and then just great to have.
Right.
You're going to need ammunition.
Yes, so find them in that banner on the right-hand side where you found our other great sponsors.
If you're looking to join the ranks of these illustrious great sponsors, then you should contact me, James, at survivalpunk.com to see if we can work out a deal to do some advertising.
Throw us your cash. If you don't have cash, throw us your bitcoins. Throw us your precious metals. Throw us your meat. We will barter with you.
Yes. And lastly,
the Survival Punk Army wants you!
Yes. Survival Punk Army is one of the ways that I help pay the bills around here. So if you like what we do, if you enjoy the podcast with me and Mike and the articles, consider joining the Survival Punk Army. Comes out to being, I think, about 25 cents an episode, or 25 cents an update.
25 cents an update. 12 different vendors you can get great discounts and deals from just from joining.
Two ebooks, including pretty soon I'm going to roll out an ebook or two, so I'll be an ebook author, and then I'll be selling those on the internet and giving them away to you guys for free that are Survival Punk Army members.
Plus, you get our show in groups of 10 on...
Groups of 10 on... in there. So I just uploaded the... And this one is episode 31, so you have 1 through 30 now to download in there.
Plus access to exclusive content, like our upcoming podcast where we review all the survival benefits of Rock City on Lookout Mountain. That'll be coming real soon, only available to Survival Punk Army members.
And with that, let's go ahead and jump into our show today with Jeff Radke of the Lost Skills Podcast, and have a good chat with him. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Jeff Radke on the show from the Lost Skills Podcast. Jeff, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Good. Did I butcher your last name, or did I get it close?
No, it's Radke. It's close. It's one of them names that aren't spelled like it's pronounced. Everybody, you should hear the telemarketers. It's crazy.
I can imagine. I got one of those last names myself.
All right, so let's jump into it, Jeff. What got you started on this whole journey to self-sufficiency, survival, preparedness, all of that?
Well, it really started when I was a kid. I was I live in a really rural area, and actually I lived in town, but you know, everybody thinks of a small town like, you know, a town of 1,500 people or 2,000 people. The town I lived in was 500 people. It was really small. I knew pretty much everyone. And my dad owned a bar, and go out there on the weekends, visit dad. Well, you don't want to sit around with a bunch of people in a bar, so I always headed out in the woods across the road, and I fished and hunted and stuff like that. And I was always an outdoor type person, and my dad always took us fishing and stuff like that. So always in the outdoors. And like everyone else, I kind of went away from it a little bit when I got a little older, like in my 20s and stuff. And now I'm kind of back to it. And I started watching. Actually, it was funny. I watched one of them stupid shows on the Discovery Channel and thought, this is cool. And went on the internet and found the Hood's Woods Forum and was a member there. And yeah, then I kind of got into TSP and stuff. And now I decided to do my own podcast. And that's kind of the short version.
So what prompted you to start the Lost Skills Podcast?
That's pretty funny, actually. Well, I always listen to survival podcasts. A lot of people usually do that are in the same preparedness thing. Well, he was doing the Save Our Skills website, and he wanted to hire somebody that knew how to do WordPress and all this and that. And I was kind of excited because I feel prepping has a little bit of the skills area. People like gravitate towards stuff and not the things that we can do, just the cheap things, you know. And I was going to apply for the job, but I didn't know how to use WordPress, so I didn't. And then some other guy got it, and then he was going to do a podcast, and I was all excited again. And then he kind of let me down after the fifth one. And I said, screw it, I'm going to do it myself. And that's how the Lost Skills Podcast was born. Although the name they had was awesome, though. Mine, eh.
Yeah. I remember when Jack was talking about trying to get someone to take over for Save Our Skills, and I was so close to thinking about doing it, and I was like, I just didn't feel that I could do it justice, which, I mean, at this, I probably could have, actually, so.
I mean,
I like Nick Ledoux over there, but you're right. I haven't seen an update from him, and I can't even tell you, man.
Yeah, if I would have known how to do WordPress, I would have been all over it, but then I didn't. So then I had to figure out how to make a podcast. I had to figure out WordPress. I had to figure out all that stuff, and it was a real learning experience, especially for a kind of computer illiterate guy like me.
Yeah, I'm fairly good on computers, but I had to teach myself WordPress, and then, God, I'm still learning podcasting stuff. I just recently got my author name on iTunes. Until like this past week, the Survival Punk podcast said it was by unknown. And I didn't realize there was a little box I left upstairs. So,
oh my God, man.
This whole time, yeah.
iTunes sucks. When I went from my old website to the new website, that was a whole experience in itself. That sucked. But yeah, that's kind of the story, you know. I was just like, you know what? Just piss on it. Nobody's going to do it. I'll do it myself. Kind of like Kevin Smith in his Tusk movie that just came out. He's like, I want to see that movie, so I'll make the damn thing. And that's what I...
Thank you. I've been trying to talk this guy into going with me to see Tusk, and he just flat out says he has no interest.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'd like to.
Oh, yeah, me too. See, that's what got me into wanting to do a podcast myself, is I'm an avid listener of almost everything on the Smodcast. Listen to the Smodcast and Hollywood Babylon, all that stuff. And I called him one day. I'm like, dude, we just need it. Well, at the end of one of his podcasts, Kevin Smith said, if you want to do a podcast, just do one. If you've got a phone that records, just do one. And I called him immediately after. I'm like, dude, we have to do a podcast now. And ironically enough, he had been thinking the same thing and was about to approach me on the subject.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually tried to ask Kevin Smith if I could use an excerpt from one of his podcasts and put it into mine. I never did get a reply from him. I wanted the part about doing a podcast and making content and saving memories and stuff. I tried to get that whole spiel, but I never got back from anybody. So, well, that's the way it goes.
But yeah.
He's a hard guy to get a hold of. Trust me, I've been trying for years. I mean, I made a 10-hour road trip, stayed up 24 hours just to go meet him, and he wound up not even showing up to the engagement.
Oh, that sucks.
Because of a delay. Well, he was there the next day, but I couldn't be there the next day. I had to be back in time to go to work.
Mm.
I went to work the next day with zero sleep. I'd been up for 24 hours straight and then still had to work.
Oh, I did want to say, you guys, when I was listening to the invite, I was laughing my ass off at work.
Oh, my celebrity invite?
Yeah. Everybody looked at me like I'd lost my mind.
Yeah, it's sort of behind the scenes of Survival Punk podcast. Sometimes we do that deliberately. Like, if we know we have a guest coming on,
I'll invite them the week before.
Yeah. So you're the first person to actually catch that. Was like, hey, that's me.
Yeah. I was like, wow, that's awesome.
Hey, I got to make it look like I got some kind of game.
So what are your goals with the Lost Skills podcast? How far do you want to take this thing?
Well, I would like to take it to where people are getting back to the way they used to be. You know, I mean, a lot of people back in the 60s and 70s, they built a lot of things they needed. Like, you know, everybody knew how to fix their car. And honestly, fixing a car now is really not much different than back in the 60s. And it's actually easier because now the car tells you what the hell's wrong with it. And
yeah.
I want to get back to that. You know, that's the thing I want to get people to realize is some of this stuff ain't hard. Some of it's, you know, just crazy easy. And it's the same thing they did back in the 80s. I work with people like, I don't work on my car no more. I'm like, you used to work on it back when you had an 85 pickup, didn't you? He goes, yeah. Hmm. I'm like, it's the same thing. Mechanically, they're the same. You know, and people are losing that. And that's why I wanted to do the podcast is to help people kind of get back to that being self-sufficient, not taking everything to the Chevy dealer or the Ford dealer or whatever. And, you know, in other ways, around their house and stuff like that. I have all kinds of projects going on around my house right now. It's crazy. I save a ton of money doing a lot of things myself. And some of the things, honestly, I have no idea how to do, and I figure it out as I go. But, you know, that's part of being self-sufficient, you know? I mean,
that's how I installed my toilet.
oh, dude, I remodeled an entire bathroom, and then my wife wanted to move the toilet 5 feet to the one side.
Oh, my God.
2 months after we moved in, we gutted the bathroom. So, well, when we moved in, it had a shower stall, and it had a cast iron tub, right? And the shower stall, I'm 6 foot tall, and the shower stall, when the water came out of the stall, and it came out of the nozzle, it hit me, like, right in the chest.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, you know, right about chest height. So to wash my hair, I had to do a squat all the time in the tub or in the shower. It sucks. So then 2 months was all we could take and tore it out. You know, I mean, it's, you know, doing those kind of things, you can't be afraid of that stuff. The worst, you just, if you do mess it up, well, then you get a guy to come and fix it. You know, it's, but I always try everything myself first, and that's what I want to kind of show people is it's not hard. Some of this stuff is just time-consuming.
Yeah, it's American laziness. I mean, this country has become very lazy. That's why people like plumbers and mechanics make so much money, because nobody wants to do it themselves.
Oh, no kidding. Plumbing is the most tedious job in the planet. I just plumbed my outdoor wood stove. I had to fix it, and oh, I worked like a 10-hour day plumbing something, and I was like, I'm sure they could do it quicker, but you know what? It only cost me about $100 instead of $500.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, my dad always told me, son, you can make a lot of money doing stuff that other people just hate to do.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's kind of what I want to show people is stuff ain't hard. If you look at a lot of my pictures, I take a lot of pictures of things, and sometimes I forget to take them in the beginning, but I kind of do it in the middle at least, and then the end finished product. And I try to put them on my website, and that's kind of why I went with the forum too.
So you went right into my next question. with so many outstanding forums out there, why did you start one?
Honestly, some of the survival forums you go on, some of them people get kind of snobby, you know what I mean? If you're not, oh my God, the super survivalist, then they treat you like you're nobody. And I'm not going to let that happen on my forum. I really don't want to have that happen. So I'm going to do all I can to give someone a place where if they got a question on how to put a toilet in, they can go on my forum and ask how to do that. You know, if they have a project they're stuck on, maybe a little group consensus, you know, or if they want to showcase their projects, people got a place to do that too. And I got book sections. I got all kinds of stuff, you know, and it's not just for preppers. It could be for normal people if they choose not to do the prepping thing. And that's kind of why I built it, just to make it so much better for everyone to get some information.
Mm-hmm.
It's go ahead.
I was going to say, I've not actually seen a lot of, like, DIY, you know, skills-based forums. Maybe I just haven't gone looking for them, to be honest. They're probably out there. But I'm willing to bet yours is more, you know, it is from someone that's into the survival and preparedness industry, but with a big, you know, skills-based thing. So it'll have some of those leanings, but I can see it being more, you know, more skills-based, more this is my project, which I like. And I know on some things, like I love Permies, but some of the people on there are just jackasses. It's like, hey, I did this. You're an idiot. You did it wrong. What? Or, you know, I'll just post again. Forget you guys.
Or if you rape the earth, you know, I mean, I've gotten that too. You know, where if you put a post in the ground and you decide to tar the post, you're a bad person for doing it. And I don't want like stuff like that going on. You know, if someone, I just want people to respect their other people's opinions and say, hey, you know, maybe that's not the best way. Here's a better way. And that's kind of how we're trying to run the place. There ain't a lot of people on there right now, but I'm actually on the forum right now, and I see there's the one in the trucks. That's the forum I posted in with some of the pictures from my truck I rebuilt, and I got tons of pictures to put up yet, but eventually I want someone to see the step-by-step and see how my truck got tore down and bring it back to a pickup truck again. That'd be kind of cool. You know.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
If you go to lostskillspodcast.com/forum, you can go see that, Mike.
I definitely will.
I mean, I'm a member. What's holding you back?
James, if you want to go post stuff up there, go ahead. Don't worry about spamming me. I don't really care about that kind of thing.
See, and that's I've not posted on forums much in the past 2 years, just because I don't want to be like that guy with the website. Because I mean, most of the things that I have to talk about are, you know, they're my website.
Right.
If you meet me in person, I'm going to tell you about my website.
Right. Well, you got to remember, I'm that guy with a website too.
Right.
You know,
well, no, he's gotten so bad, he has to stop himself from introducing himself to people as hi, I'm James from Survival Bunk.
Yeah. It's pretty bad.
Oh, I can only imagine what the people think when they're looking at watching me drive down the road in my vehicle when I'm recording a podcast. My arms are going and everything. Yeah, because everything's out in my vehicle, so they could see me pretty good, especially if they're behind me or something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, a minute ago, we were talking about preppers and everything, and what is what lost skill do you think is most overlooked by preppers?
Well, I would have to say that's darn near anything that'll save you some money that you can put towards doing that. Working on your car, though, that's one of the main things, I think. It's everybody acts like once the world comes to an end, like automobiles are going to quit running. And and that's not going to be the case at all. And maybe you can take them apart and make other things out of them. You know, everybody just acts like, oh, there's going to be an epidemic, and then everybody's car is going to quit running.
Right.
Ridiculous to me. I listen to that all the time. I don't know how many places, you know, you see stuff posted like that.
Well, have you ever actually heard of this reality show called The Colony?
Yes. I used to love that show. I used to watch it all the time.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the first season, not so much of the second season. But, I mean, that first season right there, I mean, they had a truck running on wood by the end of the episode, by the end of the season. I mean, that is something, I mean, you could ask 100 people on the street, can you make a truck run on wood? And I guarantee you're probably going to get 101 weird looks from them.
Yeah. I think that some of the scenarios were messed up there. Like, they had, like, paintball guns to defend the attackers off and stuff. That would just show all that much more awesome. You know, the bikers could have had paintball guns, and they could have been standing there shooting them, and that would have been way more realistic, but, you know.
Yeah. The security, I thought they kind of completely failed on, but out of all the shows like that, that first season was the best. I don't know if you've seen this new Utopia show. I watched one episode and kind of wanted to hang myself.
I watched about 15 minutes of the first one and 15 minutes of the second one, and then literally had to go drink and make sure that I didn't remember any of it.
Good. Yeah. I unfortunately quit drinking, so I have to remember it forever. And it's what a terrible show. I was joking around. I was like, someone needs to make a prepper production company for TV shows, because there's so many of us that would actually watch a good TV show.
There's so many that would actually go on if they knew they weren't going to be made look like an idiot, you know? I mean, it's
just yeah.
And there are some people that are okay with looking like an idiot as long as they can see their name on a TV.
Right. I have a friend, a personal friend, that was in an episode of Doomsday Preppers. And he pretty much only did it because he needed a couple $1,000 cement spraying machine. And they're like, yeah, we got that. So, and they sure enough made him out to be an idiot. So.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of the guy from Dirt Time. He was on one of the Doomsday Preppers, and it was crazy. He was a well-known guy. Christopher, I can't think of his name. Anyway.
Was it Burgess?
Yeah, they made him.
Legit.
Yeah, I know, and they made him look like to be some kind of hippie wacko that planned on running to the hills. And yeah. I know that's not the case at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've talked to those people on and off throughout the few years that I've been doing this, and yeah, I was just like, wow, they can edit anything into a TV show.
Well, if you really want to hear somebody sounding like an idiot just to try to get a little bit more famous, find my interview on the Prepper Recon podcast.
Oh my god!
Yeah, had me on because I'm an aficionado of conspiracy theories surrounding 9/11 and a few other things. So he had me on to talk about that, and I thought it was going to go great. But frankly, to me, I just sound like a wackadoodle. I couldn't even listen to all of it. I just like, oh my god! I completely sound like they just let me out of the padded room.
So you kind of sound like Alex Jones then.
Exactly.
Well.
Oh, I had to quit listening to that guy. I work with a guy that used to listen to, well, that does, still does. And boy, his outlook on life really sucked. I was like, well, if that's the case, why bother preparing for anything? Everybody's going to be rounded up anyway. He really didn't like it when I told him that.
Yeah. I wonder how much that Alex Jones actually believes and how much he's like, he figured out the personality. I mean, God, how much money does he make? So
I'm sure it's in the millions.
Yeah, so.
People love spectacle.
Right.
That's it right there. People just love spectacle. They like seeing weird stuff. That's why people will stare at a train wreck.
Well, go back on his site and listen to like one of the oldest shows they have up there, and then listen to one from last week once and listen to them. They're a little different. His shows were kind of more subdued in the beginning, and now they're just crazy.
Yeah, he found out how to make the money.
Well, right.
Now, getting back on topic a little bit, we know you were talking. Yeah, we're kind of rabbit chasers around here. We like to ramble on, but. Now you're talking about your truck and how you basically you tore that down and rebuild it. What are some of the other projects that you've done that you're pretty proud of? Like to share with us?
I'll start with the truck. I took my 85 Chevy pickup truck. It was a 2-wheel drive 3/4 ton, and converted it to a 4-wheel drive truck. Which a lot of people do that, but a lot of people just take the body off and stick it on a different frame. Well, I'm the special kind of stupid that don't do that. I cut all the brackets off and drilled all the holes and put everything in place. I basically built the frame and then built the truck, and it took me about 6 months to do. Well, at least easy 6 months. I started the weekend after Wisconsin deer season, and I ended time in April. So I was pretty busy with that. As well, I built my own garage. I built a 24x36 garage, and I put it up, I actually took it down, moved it 25 miles, and put it back up.
Wow.
So that that was a project. Somebody gave
it. What did you build that garage out of?
I took it down. It was in my father-in-law's garage, actually. I took it down in pieces, put it on a trailer, and drove it and stick it up at my house. Probably about 5 years later, I put it up.
Now, before you actually started taking apart that garage, did you have one of those moments like, moving a garage, how hard could this be?
My idea was, well, shit, it's a free garage. It's got to give me some money somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I could stick a little bit extra money in the concrete. I got a really nice new garage door for it. I bought more expensive shingles. You know, you can use the money in other places, especially when you're saving $30 a truss. And boy, I don't remember how many there are now, but I think there's like 30 trusses. Holy cow!
Oh, wow. If you want to swing by Tennessee and help me dismantle a trailer, that would be awesome.
I actually know someone here that does that. He gets free trailers and brings them to his place, and he tears them apart, saves all the insulation, saves all the aluminum off of them, and he sells the frames and stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's a couple things we can salvage from it. The windows, there's like 8 windows in perfect condition, a few doors. It was a partial burn trailer, so a lot of the insulation's probably garbage. And they somebody ripped all the wiring out of it to, you know, get the copper, so that's gone. But, you know, some of the kitchen cabinets weren't even touched by flames.
Oh, yeah.
So I got a trailer, a small, like, travel trailer. I'm going to actually use some of the stuff from that to build a tiny house on that. So that's 2 projects, tearing down a trailer and building a tiny house.
Now, you need to be careful who you're asking to help with you. The last guy you asked to help, he didn't even talk to you for several days afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when I did my garage, I actually was standing on the roof with a chainsaw and cutting the between the trusses.
Between the trusses. That is perfect.
We started on one end and I ended on the other end, so I don't know. Maybe I'm not the guy to ask for that.
Go ahead.
It was okay once until I got down to like the last 3, and then it kind of got a little hairy. You know, there wasn't much roof to stand on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at least you're not one of these guys who'd be like, oh, I got to cut a hole in this roof and then stand there in the middle of it and turn around in a circle with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
We were just talking earlier, actually, about, you know, some people were just obsessed with being like safety Sallys. You know, because I put out a video of me splitting a fell down tree with some railroad spikes. And I put that in the Permies forum. And the only comment I got was someone talking about, oh, you better make sure next time you wear your safety equipment and your face shield. And I'm like, what? Come on.
When was the last time your mother let you out in the yard to go play, sir?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Actually, I have a video. I don't know if you've seen it on my YouTube channel where when my friend was running my chainsaw, I got one with a 4-foot chainsaw bar and we were cutting pallets up. And I was surprised nobody commented how he wasn't wearing chaps and a face shield. I was impressed. If you watch a gun video, it's always someone like, are you sure that's unloaded? That's like the second
time. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Are you sure that's unloaded?
It kills me. People got nothing better to do.
Right.
I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that I'd get sued, I'd put up a gun safety video. First, look down the chamber to make sure there's nothing in there.
Oh, God. Yeah. The problem is there would be people that would do it.
Oh, God. That's why they have to put it on Windex bottles. Do not spray into eyes.
If you go on YouTube, look up a YouTube guy called The Yankee Marshall. He's got... He does gun reviews mostly, and he's got this Glock that he named Gary the Glock. And the Glock is abusive. Like, he puts it on a little stick and, like, moves it around and puts, like, eyebrows on it. And Gary the Glock is always freaking out and shooting him.
Oh, my God. I've got to check this out.
That would be funny.
That's so good.
That sounds awesome.
So, back on to projects. I can see we're going to get derailed this whole interview. I love it.
Yeah.
So, tell me about your best and worst project ever.
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. You know, the problem is that I actually like to do things like that. I like doing remodeling on my house. I like doing stuff like that. So bad projects afterwards, it seems like there's never a bad project, but, you know, there's times in the middle where you're like, oh, this sucks. Wish I would have never did this. And probably if I had to pick one, it would be when I was insulating the room, my kid's bedroom on the outside, digging along the foundation. My brilliant ass decided to do it with a shovel and dig. So I dug a hole 24 feet long, 3 feet wide, all the way to the foundation of my house. And then I tarred it and put 2-inch pink styrofoam on it, which was a really sucky project. And actually, it's one that's not done yet because it sucks so bad.
Oh, wow.
I got about half my house done. So when I get time, I you know, and I don't have a project going on, that's where we go with that. It's kind of something that's ongoing, a sucky project.
It's your last resort project, it sounds like. When all else fails, I've got this to do.
Oh, man. Well, there's that shovel. Well, we had water coming in, like, my daughter's closet, and it was leaking in the corner and stuff. So, I mean, it wasn't like a gusher, but it was just leaking a little bit. So we wanted to waterproof the wall. But when they built the house, they never did anything like that because it was back in the 70s, you know.
Oh.
So, yeah, I'm slowly getting that done. Now, one of the, I'm trying to think of the best project. The best project in the terms of saving money was my wood boiler. That was like the best.
I put an
outdoor wood boiler in. It's actually in a building about 150 feet from my house, and the water's plumbed in from there, and then it goes into a heat exchanger in my furnace. And it also heats my hot water in my house, too. So I don't have to have my hot water heater turned on. I save a lot of money.
Pretty sweet, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
my parents own quite a bit of land, so I go out there and get firewood. I figure it costs me about $400 a year in gas and chainsaw chains and stuff, and I get to heat my house through a crappy Wisconsin winter, so that's not a bad deal. Got the wood boiler for free. I just had to weld it back up, and I installed it myself, so I think I spent like $1,500 putting it in, and if you buy one, they're about $8,000 to $10,000. So that was like one of the best projects.
Oh, I can imagine. That sounds awesome.
And anything that involves working on a car, I love doing that. That's like one of my things I love doing. So,
which I'm the opposite. I can do things to cars. I've changed alternators and...
You've changed my alternator.
Yes, starters. I changed your starter. I've changed your oil. Water pumps, and I hate it every single time. I hate it.
See, and I'm like the antithesis. There's a reason I'm... See, my name on the show is CPS Mike. That stands for Couch Potato Survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the guy that until recently has pretty much done nothing, kind of got dragged into this whole thing, and now I'm loving every minute of it. Well, we live a weird, really weird life. Like, for example... My partner here, the survival punk himself, he lives in an apartment for right now, and he's into all this stuff. Meanwhile, I sit on my couch in my house on 28 acres of land that I do virtually nothing with.
Yeah.
One of my proudest days was the day that I changed my oil for the first time, though.
Oh, and yeah, and you know, that's one of the crazy things that people can save so much money doing. It's just... It's amazing, and do the job right. That's the problem, like, with a quick loop. Mm-hmm. They do the job really crappy. Actually, a friend of mine put a video on YouTube that said why quick lubes suck. He took apart a motor and showed all the sludge in the motor from people not getting regular changes in the quick lube, not doing their job right. And, boy, he got a lot of fallout from that. But
I tell you, the most scary part for me, though, the first time I changed my oil, I'm a bit smaller in stature than I used to be, And back then, I was driving a Chevy Cavalier, and I had this thing jacked up and on jack stands, and those damn things would not go up high enough for my fat gut to fit comfortably under that car. My stomach is pressing up against stuff, and I was sure at any moment that if I coughed hard, I was going to die.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, if this thing falls 1 inch, I'm screwed. One more reason to lose weight.
Oh, yeah. I've already been working on a truck at my friend's house, and we had it on a bumper jack when we were kids, and the truck started to slide off the jack, and my friend had to push on the side of the car to hold it up until I finished doing something to it.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's one for the safety Sallys. Boy, I wish we had YouTube back then when I was a kid. Holy cow.
Oh, my God. Now, we've already been touching on this a little bit, but what do you think are some of the benefits of knowing how to maintain a vehicle after, you know, the shit hits the fan, so to speak?
Well, for one thing, you know, I mean, things are still going to go bad. Knowing how to change your belt, I mean, that's one of the best things. You can have an extra belt. You know, some of the expensive stuff like ball joints and axles and stuff like that, that's really stuff that, well, when shit hits the fan, hopefully there's another vehicle you can steal that from. But, you know, doing the simple stuff just to keep it going. And if shit hits the fan, I mean, and if it hits your own personal fan where you lose your job or something, changing your belt or your oil or your water pump, that might not be in the budget unless you do it yourself, you know. I mean, that's one of the things like that. You gotta, I like doing that stuff myself, so it's not a big deal to me. But some people don't know how to even put oil in their cars. I worked with someone that didn't know how to do that. I just show them.
My old Oldsmobile, my first car was an 86 Olds, and that thing trained me how to put oil in the car quick. I mean, every tank of gas, it seemed like I was putting a quart of oil in that damn thing.
My dad had a conversion van that got 200 miles to the quart on oil, and he drove it to California, and they had to take 3.5 cases of oil, I think, if I remember right. He took one of his friends with that smoked, and he said about every time they needed a quart, the guy needed a cigarette, so he sent them out to put the oil in it.
That's killing two birds with one stone.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, you know, being able to maintain that stuff, just doing the basics will keep your vehicle running a lot longer. And, the other things I was saying is that just being able to change your oil and going under there and seeing if any of the joints need to be greased or anything like that, that's just something that's regular maintenance. And you go to a quick lube, they don't do that. I've caught like 3 or 4 quick lubes not doing it. I even caught a Chevy dealer not doing it, and boy, did I bitch them out, because you pay good money for that, you know?
Yeah. Actually, like, behind-the-scenes story, I used to work retail in management, and I hated having a oil changing, tire changing place in the store. It was constant headaches. They broke shit every day. Every day they broke something, and it was just retarded stuff. Like, worst story ever. Some new guy that was pretty mentally retarded. He drained out the transmission fluid, added 4 more quarts of oil somehow. I don't even know how he fit it in there. He just topped that sucker off with oil and then drove it out, you know, to do the drive around test, you know, and the customer was outside, I think smoking or something, and they heard the gear starting to grind in their car because they didn't have any transmission fluid.
Oh.
So we bought them a new engine, and it was either a Durango or an Escalade. It was an expensive car, and it was a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
The thing is, that's not even the first time I've heard that story. The Walmart that my dad used to work at, when he used to work in the tire and lube, that happened twice while he was working there.
Oh, I went to a Jiffy Lube, and they only put my drain plug in my car hand tight. Luckily, I only worked a mile away from the Jiffy Lube, and I was at work, and one of the guys came in and said, "Hey, why is your car leaking oil? I'm like, my car don't leak oil. He goes, well, there's a big puddle. Walked out, crawled under it and reached it with my finger tight. I tightened it up. I had to go inside where I work and get a wrench and tighten it up.
I mean, it just makes you wonder what's going on in these people's minds, if anything. Like, okay, I can't reach the wrench. Yeah, that's good enough.
Yeah. They're like, well, let's get as many people through as we can. And, you know, that's the benefit of doing yourself. You can just take your time. That's what I do. It takes me like an hour to do an oil change because I let it drain out good and stuff like that. I don't rush it. I just go do something else for an hour while it drains, or half an hour or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that sort of brings up a topic that we could probably spend the entire rest of the show talking about, and that's just general pride in your workmanship that's just not there for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, there are a lot of people picking up a paycheck at work, that's for sure. I work with some of them.
Yeah. I mean, I know at least at the Walmart, that's minimum wage pay they get paid in the tire changing place. I mean, it's not... Like at Jiffy Lube, I think they start you out around $15. You know, if you're changing oil at Walmart, you're making like $7-$8. So yeah, there's no incentive really to give a crap. And you know, if you do, of course, you get promoted quick because you're the one of the few people that do.
Right. Well, you're probably the smartest guy there. Usually, you know, I mean, it's when you move up like that in a place, it's usually you're the guy that shows them like, hey, that guy's got a head on his shoulders. And
yeah.
And then they replace you, unfortunately, with someone that doesn't care.
Right. Or you find a company that does care and you go work for them instead.
Right.
Oh.
So.
Now, speaking of deer hunting.
So do you have any tips for first-time deer hunters?
Well, I guess my first tip is to not get caught up in all the hype and the hunt and show hype and stuff like that. I mean, it's deer hunting is a billion-dollar a year industry. I don't know the numbers for sure, but I would guess $1 billion a year. And they sell cover scents and this and that. Now, your grandpa used to walk out in the woods in a flannel shirt and, you know, sit in underneath a tree and go hunting, and they always managed to shoot deer before there was super scents and scent lockers and stuff like that. So my advice is, you know, keep it basic. You know, you pretty much just need a gun and some time, and you know, some basic things like making sure the wind's the right direction and stuff like that. But my thing would be to build yourself a nice box blind and go sit in there. I did that years ago, and that's the best thing I ever did.
Nice. Yeah, there's some good vantage points on the 6 acres of land I'm going to be moving to. So I'll probably set up some deer feed. I think it's legal in Tennessee to put out a deer feeder, so I just want to make sure that the area is attractive to them.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, one of the best ways to do that is to get yourself like a game camera, and when you put the bait pile out, just put the game camera there, and you kind of got a good idea what's going on. Unless you have a really nice deer coming out, like I did last year, and I got buck fever and missed.
Oh wow!
Oh, I missed an easy shot, 150 yards, which is pretty easy with my gun, and. My friend goes, well, let's put up a deer-sized target here, and you could shoot it from your deer stand. I said, why? So I could be really pissed off that I missed it. Because, you know, it's one of those things. I shoot my gun a lot. I know it's spot on there. It was just jittery nerves. Got to take a deep breath and definitely... You know, take it easy when you shoot. That I forgot everything I ever knew about deer hunting in them 10 seconds. It was,
yeah.
Oh, I can see how that'd be easy enough to do.
Yeah. You got to definitely keep your cool. That's another tip. And the other thing, shoot a couple of does and get it right out of your system the first couple of years. Don't be a trophy hunter. That's just.
This will be the first year that I do any hunting, and the only thing I'm interested in is eating. I just want
to eat. Yeah.
Antlers, no antlers, I don't care.
Yeah, I usually don't either. It was just happened to be one of those things. I was looking at a couple of deer and deciding what I was going to shoot, and I kind of looked the other direction, and I was like, holy cow, what's that? That's huge. And that,
wow.
I made the mistake of looking at its head before I shot it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's only one piece I could get from that is never go moose hunting with a bow.
Yeah.
I saw what happened to a guy who did that recently on this documentary I watched all about moose attacks. He shoots a full-grown bull moose from 10 feet away with a bow.
How did he even get that close? That's ridiculous.
Well, moose have incredibly bad eyesight.
Oh.
And the moose knew somebody was around but couldn't tell where they were. The dude's standing there, stark still, holding this compound bow, gets about 10 feet away, and the guy decides, yeah, this is a good time to shoot. Yeah, the moose died, but not before he got really, really pissed off.
Oh, yeah.
And damn near took the dude with him.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of building yourself like a small little box blind, something, you know, 5x5 with a little roof on it, maybe some sliding windows out of plexiglass or something, and that just makes hunting way more comfortable. The more comfortable you are, the more you're going to sit there and, you know, and it kind of keeps them from seeing you move so much. That's
right.
Nice. You know, mine's 20 feet up in the air, actually. Mine's
so
like
nice.
Mine's a mansion. It's on top of a hill, and it's about 20 feet up. And it's, I think it's 6x8, if I remember right. I mean, I stay up there all day. I never come down.
That's a tiny house right there.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah. Yeah, basically.
Wow.
If there's ever a zombie apocalypse, I'm going up there, and I'm cutting the stairs down.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually read on a Facebook group earlier, some guy actually said, if the zombie apocalypse come, I'm going to live in a treehouse. And I know, I've seen this before, there are actually people that make real plans. Like, I joke about it, and, you know, I make-believe plans. But some people, they're serious, and they have dumb plans.
Oh. Well, my brother's idea is to take over a Walmart by himself, so...
Oh, of course, yeah, yeah. I may do an entire podcast on why bugging out to Walmart is a dumb idea.
Too many doors, for one thing.
Well, it's... You said, who was your brother, brother-in-law?
My brother, yeah.
Your brother, yeah. Yeah, your brother and about 17 million other people. And they will probably beat you to it.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, that's a death trap waiting. It's just a bad idea.
Hell, and depending on what part of the country you're in, most of those people will already be in Walmart to begin with.
Yeah.
Well, a Walmart would be hard with 20 people to keep it yours. I could only imagine one person.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Obviously, the better choice is to go to Sam's Club, because then you need a membership to get in, right?
Right. Yeah, that's why the zombies can't get in. No membership.
Yeah. Ah,
you just see them creeping up, moaning, holding their damn card.
Aw, man.
Well, I had to let him in, Sarge. He had a membership card.
Oh, God.
Oh. Oh. That's
so funny. I got one question left.
All right.
I'm actually going out to my property, Dual Homestead, on Sunday, and, my friend Dave is going to bring out his portable chainsaw mill, and we're going to have some axes. So I was looking through your podcast, and I noticed that you had one way, way back long ago about portable sawmills and rough cut or rough hewn lumber. So tell me all about that, because I'm going to do that.
Well, right about that time I did that podcast, I actually built a portable chainsaw mill one day at work. When you're kind of slow and I kind of just like,
hey, sorry about that. We had an internet hiccup.
Yeah. Where was I?
You were talking about how you had a slow day at work and built a portable chainsaw mill.
Yeah.
When I have a slow day at work, I get on crack.com.
Well, we don't have internet where I work. I work in a welding and fabrication place, so you know, sometimes the projects get kind of crazy. I saw a guy build a garden trailer for his lawnmower one day. Well, we decided to build one, and I'd been watching YouTube videos, and I wanted one for a while. But I wasn't going to pay, like, the $200 they want for the Alaskan slab mill or whatever it is from Northern. So I decided I'd build one. I kind of knew how they were put together. And that's how I'm lucky that way. I can kind of see how things are made, and I can put them together that way. So, I made that, and I actually use a lot of rough sawn lumber in a lot of the things I build here. I built a couple of sheds that way. I use it for forming concrete all the time. And the difference between regular 2x4s and like a rough sawn one is a regular 2x4 is it's 1¾ by 2¾, and a real one is 2x4. So I like using that stuff.
That always gets to me that a 2x4 is not actually a 2x4, and 2x6 isn't actually a 2x6. You lose, what, some inches, yeah.
Yeah, well, the reason you lose that is because after they cut it to that size, then they run it through a planer, and then they, kiln dry it and stuff, and it shrinks up a little bit. But they pretty much have that down where they can be consistent. When I do get it from the sawmill, sometimes it might vary like a 1/16 in size, but if you're watching, like when you build a wall, you use all them ones that are just same size roughly down the wall and stuff like that. And, you know, a planer actually doesn't have a bad thing to have. If you take a planer and run that rough sawn stuff through there, then it can be all exactly the same size. So, yeah, I mean, I built the sawmill. I used it a few times, but I've just been doing so many other projects, I haven't gotten to it, and I actually want to get to that. And that's the reason I have the chainsaw with the 4-foot bar, is I was going to turn that into a portable sawmill, because that's got a lot of power. It'd be a lot easier on the chainsaw.
What brand chainsaw is that, by the way?
It's a Steel.
Ah.
That chainsaw now, if you probably bought it, it's probably about $1,500. I paid a guy $50, and I got the barn chain with it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah, he had two of them, and what are you going to do with two of those? So he sold it to me dirt cheap.
Yeah.
But, the little chainsaws, those chainsaw mills are nice, but if you do a lot of it, it's really hard on a chainsaw, and you'll end up getting it rebuilt a lot quicker. And one of these days, I got to do a YouTube video on rebuilding a chainsaw. I got all the parts in my garage for one of them that I'm going to do that with.
Nice. I'll definitely watch that. If Dave can find his the chain for the chainsaw to do the chainsaw mill, we're going to do that on Sunday. If not, I'm going to take the axe and see if I could hew it by hand.
Oh.
So. That'll be a fun workout. I might get a side or two down.
Yeah.
I've only ever used a chainsaw one day in my life. And my wife very quick. And I was up on this ladder. I had this ladder leaning against this branch. And my wife needed me to cut off this branch because it was drooping real low and in danger of breaking. So I leaned the ladder against the branch that I was going to be cutting down and started sawing on the side of the ladder that was leading toward the tree. She had to scream up there and stop. Thank God I could barely hear her ass over that, because I was not realizing the horrible mistake I was about to make on a 15-foot ladder.
That never,
holding a chainsaw.
That never works out well in the cartoons. Didn't you ever watch The Roadrunner?
Yeah.
But, you should be able to find it's called a rip chain. You should be able to find them on the internet, actually. Fairly easy, as long as you know what size it is, and or if whatever brand chainsaw it is, you go to the dealer. They should be able to have. They should have one there for it. Otherwise, if you're just cutting, you know, maybe 5 or 10 cuts, you can just use a regular chain that's really sharp. You know, you'll have to sharpen it more, but it will work for that.
Right.
I just used a regular one. I never did manage to buy a rip chain for my chainsaw.
Oh, okay. So, not a super big deal.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see a YouTube video of you doing that by hand.
if if I do it, then there will be a YouTube video.
You know, the best place to find lumber like that is to take down an old barn. There's all kinds of lumber that's rough-hewn lumber that's in barns and stuff.
I thought about doing that because around Mike out here, there's a bunch of decrepit, busted-up barns, and I'm sure they're not doing anything with them.
Oh, barns, houses, and everything.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of taking down one barn once. That was kind of a pain in the butt. But, you know, we did get a bunch of nice lumber out of it and stuff. A lot of rough sawn stuff that was probably from, I don't know, maybe the 40s or something. So it was a lot of really nice, like 2x12s and 1x12s and stuff like that. I saved a lot of that. I think I built some deer stands out of it or something.
Yeah. I want to eventually build a pole barn, maybe on a smaller side, you know, from just round wood and stuff from around the land, because it's too dense. I need to take out some of those trees, so two birds, one stone, you know.
Right, right. Well, I saw a dude on that Mountain Men show on the History Channel. I saw him build a log cabin with nothing but a chainsaw, and he just set the logs on top of each other, took the chainsaw, went right between the groove between the two and made them both flat and just kept stacking logs like that, so it wouldn't be hard to do.
That's pretty awesome.
I might give that a try.
I've been wanting to build myself a log cabin for a while, just a little one, like a 12x15 or something.
Yeah, that's... I was thinking a smaller one, like just a proof concept. Like I might make a little, you know...
It should make you an igloo.
Well, I was thinking one for chickens, like a little chicken cabin, you know, because little logs, you know, like a 4x4
little,
or something.
Little chicken cabin.
Little chicken cabin,
little stone fireplace. Yeah. Tiny rocking chairs.
Yeah.
Well, I got to build mine a little bigger. I got a wife and kid.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I guess building small stuff isn't something I do. My dog's doghouse is 4x8.
Dog mansion.
Yeah, he's got a doggy condo. I actually have a YouTube video on that too. My friend's daughter's playhouse. She got older, and he's like, "Do you want it?" I'm like, "What am I gonna do with a 4x8 doghouse?" He's like, "Or a playhouse." He goes, "Make a doghouse." I'm like, "Oh God."
What kind of dog do you have? And please tell me it's a teacup chihuahua.
No, it's a 105-pound black lab.
Oh. Those are the that's like the best breed. I used to have one named Buddy, and that was the best dog I've ever had.
Yeah.
Barn, I love that dog. He was a little bit OCD though. He'd rather play fetch than eat when he was hungry.
Oh yeah. I have that problem too. If you go on the web on the Lost Skills podcast, the banner with the picture of the dog, that's my dog when he's about 6 months old, and he was a pretty good sized dog back then.
Well, I used to go walking Buddy, and I swear to God, that dog would, every stick on the road, he would stop, look at it, look at me, and I'd be like, come on.
I took mine hiking and got him to carry back a piece, like a 2-inch piece, probably about 2 feet long of wood. I got him to carry it a mile and a half.
There you go.
Then I threw it in my truck and threw it in the wood boiler when I got home.
Nice.
Just trying to tire him out. He's kind of hyper.
Man's best friend, man's best employee.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh.
All right, well, that's all the questions we got for you.
All right.
That was fun. I enjoyed having you on.
Definitely.
Anytime you guys want to have me on, I'll come back on.
Oh, awesome. you definitely, as I say on the show, got an open-ended, open-door invite to come on.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure we got all kinds of stuff. I got projects that I probably forgot about.
Yeah.
Get some good laughs over. Don't always do things the safest way, but try to get them done anyway, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, well, it's been good having you on. We'll talk to you later, Jeff.
Don't forget. Well, if our listeners want to hear your podcast, check out the website. Where do they need to go?
They need to go to www.lostskillspodcast.com. And if you go there, you can listen to the podcast. Actually, the reason I have a podcast, too, is I'm a shitty typer. I say that in my podcast all the time. I'm sure James saw my Facebook messages. He's like, oh, man, he writes like a kindergartner.
Yeah. Don't feel bad. You should read some of his earliest posts.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so...
see the crayon marks.
And if you go there, you can find the link to the forum. It's right in the top. And I hope people come over and check out the forum. It's small right now. We're kind of growing. We've been doing it for, I think I started in June, and I'm kind of trying to get it to grow. I think there's like 30 or 40 people there now. So there aren't a lot of posters, so a lot of people don't want to be the first ones to start. But, you know, come over, and if you got a project you're proud of, man, put it up. That's what it's there for.
All right. Me and Mike might start posting to and bring some hooligans with us.
That's perfectly fine. The more the merrier.
Fun.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Jeff, it has been great talking to you. And like I said, you can come back on the show anytime you want.
All right. I'll definitely
talk to you later.
All right. Bye.